Today on Rock in the Suburbs, we talk about the album that won the Grammy for Best Metal Performance in 1989.
Mike, that would mean we'd wandered into Jethro Tull week.
Oh man, they really didn't?
Yeah, no, they didn't. There was no justice at all. Hello, my name's Stephen Routledge, and I'm not Jim Lenahan. Today with me again, and all week, is not Patrick Foster, but the one and only...
Mike Cawley.
Right, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We've made it into week two. Week two of Metallica Week, day two of Metallica Week. And we left things off yesterday with... them having just produced an absolute classic album, their second album, Ride the Lightning, signed with Q Prime Management, who would then get them onto their major label deals with both, say, Elektra and Phonogram. And they then, with the sort of muscle of Q Prime behind them, they were able to get onto bigger and better tours. And they went into the studio and... in 1986, produced an album that you and I might be slightly familiar with, called Master of Puppets.
Stone cold classic.
Well, I would go even further than that, Mike. I would be as bold as to claim that this is probably the greatest metal album ever recorded.
Now that is bold.
It's bold, but you can't argue it's in the discussion, Mike, can you?
It definitely is in the discussion.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
There are alternate suggestions that could be made, but no one's going to laugh in your face for saying Master of Puppets is the greatest metal album of all time, are they?
Well, if they do, they don't listen to metal.
Well, yeah. Or they've never heard Master of Puppets. Yeah. So, 1986, again, recorded over in Copenhagen, if I remember rightly, with Flemming Rasmussen as the producer. And, did they come back and record some of that in the US? I'm getting mixed up now.
I think they did do a couple tracks in L.A. for that one.
I think, they maybe finished it off in back in America. But anyway, basically the same crew, and it's basically like Ride the Lightning, but just better.
Exactly. They followed it's pretty much the same formula as Ride the Lightning.
Very, very similar. They had almost exactly the same sort of template in terms of the layout of the album, the types of songs they're putting on it. But just everything was just that little bit better. They were tighter, better band from being on the road longer, although we'll get to tightness when we talk tomorrow. But just the songs, Mike, they're just phenomenal, aren't they?
I mean, front to back, this album, you'd be hard-pressed to argue against it being one of the all-time best albums.
Yeah. There's nothing on there. There's no skippables. It's just all gold. So rather than us continuing to sort of spout about how wonderful it is, let's give the folks a little blast of the opening track, Battery. Thank you. I mean, I had to press stop, Mike, because if I didn't, we'd probably just play the whole of Master of Puppets and sit and listen to it again, wouldn't we?
Oh, hang on. A listening party with Mike and Steven.
To the whole album.
That album brings back so many memories. I remember when that came out, distinctly remember when that came out. I was a junior in high school on the baseball team, riding the Pines, backup outfielder, and one of the pitchers on the team was a senior, and he took me under his wing because we were the metalheads on the team. And whenever we went on away trips, we'd ride the bus together. We'd swap tapes back and forth with each other. So we were listening to this album and Slayer's Rain and Blood every road trip that whole season. And I just have really cool memories of that album and exactly where I was when that came out. Because I was all in with Metallica at this point.
Yeah, well, certainly following up Ride the Lightning with this, I mean, you've either given up and don't like metal at this point, or you're going to be absolutely captivated by this album. Like we said, every track a classic, and this album actually features my favourite Metallica song.
Would that be Orion?
It would be Orion, yes.
Same here.
Which is a song that they don't very often play. it's another Cliff. It's basically a Cliff song, very much inspired by his love of. Whilst he loved the metal and the punk and all this stuff, he would also listen to Creedence and the Eagles and John Denver and stuff like this and Bark, and as we mentioned before, he would just
and the Misfits.
Yeah, so one guy who would. Yeah, he would have fitted right in our community. A guy who would listen to the Misfits and just some cheesy kind of like top 40 stuff as well. But he really broadened their musical outlook. I'm really thrilled that Orion is your favourite Metallica track, because I think it's people who only know Metallica from sort of the latter part of their career. You're not aware of Orion, but I think it's just this masterpiece of, it just shows what they were actually capable of, musically.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a little bit of everything Metallica is known for mixed into that one song, with no vocals, obviously,
because
it's an instrumental, but I think that's what makes it stand out even more.
Yeah, it just makes that a little bit extra special, because you can't, be it being an instrumental, there's no sort of preconception or misinterpretation laid upon it by the lyrics.
Yes.
It's purely this wonderful piece of music that you can just absorb for its own sake. So, I think we should do that then, Mike, shouldn't we?
All right, let's do it.
is, Mike. Another one was hard to press stop on.
Oh, that great chunking guitar.
You really notice it actually on with the lack of vocals. That very distinctive thrash metal guitar sound, that scooped sound, which basically, for those not aware, what they do is they, in fact, I believe this for recording this, they used a Mesa Boogie Mark II C Plus, which is a it sort of became synonymous with that thrash metal sound. With because the Mesa Boogie amps, unlike a lot of guitar amps at the time, they'd have like your treble, middle, and bass on the tone controls. It had a 5-band graphic EQ, so you could switch that EQ on, and then you could really sort of much more on the amp itself rather than on the mixing disc. You could get that scoop sound coming straight out the speaker, and you can really hear that when it comes in, when the guitar's coming over Cliff's bass part there. And yeah, that sound, and that's very much the sort of identified as that thrash metal guitar sound, that scooped out boogie sound. So
that's some gear talk I'm unfamiliar with.
Yeah, anyway, well, before we just yeah, sorry Mike, before we I wandered down guitar ramp avenue there, but just yeah, an absolute masterpiece. Shows the band at their best, and Cliff at his sort of most creative as well, I think, you know.
And there's been some really cool covers of that over the years. I'm sure you're familiar with the, I forget what they called it. It was a tribute to Master Puppets that came out. I think Kerrang! Magazine put it together.
Oh, yeah, because I think Trivium did one for that, didn't they?
Yeah, Trivium was on there, and Mastodon was on there. And then the Mexican brother-sister duo, Rodrigo y Gabriela,
they do a really
cool acoustic version of that. If you can find that, check it out. It's really cool.
Yeah, and we'll maybe come back to them at the end of the week as well.
Yeah,
when we're talking a little bit more about covers of Metallica stuff. But so anyway, Master of Puppets comes out. I think pretty much in the metal press, universally hailed as an excellent album. I think it's only grown in stature probably since then. And thanks to their new management deal, they were touring with Ozzy Osbourne, and noticeably getting very popular at this point with the metal fans who saw them. You know, Ozzy's audience getting exposed to them were getting won over pretty easily.
At certain points, the Metallica fans were probably as many as the Ozzy fans in the audience.
Yeah. I think and this probably wouldn't have escaped one Mrs. Osbourne's attention that Metallica merch was outselling Aussie merch.
Yeah,
which is, and I think the same thing happened actually when Slipknot were on Ozfest, when they were just breaking out, that Slipknot suddenly were like getting more, becoming almost the main draw, even though they were lower down on the bill, but yeah, so they were making strides forward, and sales were better. I mean, still not astronomical, but certainly heading in the right direction. However, whilst on tour in Europe promoting Master of Puppets, in Sweden, tragedy strikes, and for once, tragedy is not an overused, is not overstating it, because I'm sure many of you will be aware that the coach in which they were travelling between shows on overturned, and Cliff Burton was killed in the ensuing crash that happened. And obviously, given what we've said about and his musicianship and what he brought to the band, the obvious question at that point was, is Metallica done?
Yeah, that hit me. As a teenage kid who was in love with this band, as soon as I heard news of that happening, it crushed me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and I think it's hard to underestimate how important he was on the development of the band. He was very much the guy that James and Lars, particularly James, I think, on stage. I think if you see early footage of the early shows, he's constantly glancing across towards Cliff. Sort of like, there's my big brother here keeping me right. This is the guy who's got this presence. He doesn't care what anyone else thinks, who can, just that reassurance of this guy who's a bit more worldly, a little bit, because he was just a little bit older than the rest of the guys, and not significantly, but just a few years older. and just.
But when you're at that age as well, I mean, when you're in your early 20s, somebody that's even just slightly older than you just has that little extra life experience.
If you're 21
experience.
And someone's 25, it's a big difference, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, so there were genuine questions as to whether, the band would continue, but it was fairly quickly decided that they would. And they set about recruiting Cliff's replacement. And now, in hindsight, as we will continue further through the week, they maybe didn't take enough time to do that and didn't maybe approach it in the right way and didn't give themselves enough time to grieve before perhaps they moved on. But I think you'd probably agree, Mike, the sort of the drive that they had, particularly Lars, and with the Q Prime behind them at this time, you know, the ball was rolling and they wanted to keep it rolling, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they had that tour going in Europe with Anthrax and they were really starting to get popular and they just wanted to keep that going as any way possible. And they wanted to get back on the road. And like you said, they obviously didn't grieve properly. I mean, everybody grieves differently anyways, but, I mean, they just jumped right back into it as quickly as they could.
Yes, and we'll get to that on day four, because the issues that come from them not grieving and how they dealt with Cliff's replacement will come to a head in a quite spectacular way on day four. But they did, onwards they did plough, and they ended up recruiting a guy named Jason Newsted from a band called Flotsam and Jetsam. And part of the, I think, the issues that they later developed, and will be evident also on the next record, when Jason turned up for his audition with Metallica, he was a fan of Metallica. And they said to him, what do you want to play? And he said, well, any song you like. I know all your songs.
He didn't have to rehearse anything. He knew them all.
He's like, I can play any of the songs that are on any of your albums. So he's a highly accomplished musician, Jason. And I'm not trying to do him down in any way, but he wasn't the musician that Cliff was, because he didn't have that sort of, I don't care what you think, kind of confidence. And he was coming into this unit from outside, so naturally he was always going to be he was the new guy. The guy who he was replacing was a guy that they moved to be where he was because they wanted him, and now we've got the reverse situation. You've got a guy coming in who wants to be in the band and is going, so Jason joins the band, and to cut his teeth and to get something else out there, they recorded an EP, Mike, which I believe we want to touch on there.
Yeah, the 598 EP, Garage Days Revisited, which kind of is a hearkening back to their first, I think it was the Creeping Death 12-inch single that they released right around Ride the Lightning time, where they recorded the song Blitzkrieg by the band Blitzkrieg. And what was the other one? MA Evil.
Yes.
I think is what then they decided to...
That's a Diamond Head one, yeah.
Yeah, Diamond Head's MA Evil. And then that's when they, it was just kind of to get their feet wet with the new guy.
And introduce
him to the fans.
Yeah, and so, they put out this EP before they went on to go and record their next album. Did you want to hear a little snippet from the Garage Days Revisited, Mike?
Yeah.
A bit Helpless, maybe?
I was just going to say Helpless.
Okay. Dreams I hope it lasts, never fade away. go. There's a bit of Helpless from the Garage Days revisited.
That was really kind of my intro to Diamond Head, was them doing that song. And I started seeking out Diamond Head stuff after that. And obviously, I mean, being into Metallica at the time and how they sped everything up, all their covers and whatnot, Diamond Head's a little bit slower, from that new wave of British heavy metal. But it took me a bit to get into it. But yeah, I thank Metallica for, especially Lars, for introducing that band to the world.
And I'm sure the guys from Diamond Head appreciated Metallica covering their songs, particularly when we get a few years hence from this point. I'm sure they did quite nicely out of the royalties from some of those covers that are coming down the line. One thing that also is of note in hearing that, Mike, which we'll notice isn't there when we get onto talking about the next album, is you can actually hear Jason playing.
Yeah.
So he certainly had the chops, but I think now, by their own admission, and certainly from Jason's point of view, they were pretty tough on him as the new guy in the band, with the hazing and just not really respecting him as an equal, very much treating him as the new guy,
And that didn't end. It kept going as long as he was in the band.
Yes, that never really stopped, yeah. Yeah, so with Jason now on board, we move on to 1988 and we get And Justice for All. And this is the album that kind of pushes them up a level in terms of the sort of sizes of venues that they're playing. I think they were playing arenas probably on the Justice tour. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, arenas, amphitheaters. I saw them probably 6 times on that tour. They toured on it for like 3 years straight, I think. And I got to see him several times on that tour. They just kept rolling around the world.
Yes, they just put in the yards on the road and just kept building their popularity and the sale. Now on a major label with major label sort of marketing muscle behind them, they were getting selling more and more records and getting more and more successful. And as we alluded to in the introduction. This was the year that they famously lost out on the Grammy for Best Hard Rock and Metal Performance to Jethro Tull.
The first ever Hard Rock Heavy Metal Grammy Award, I believe.
Yeah, and it didn't go to Metallica, but it went to those thrash metal titans, Jethro Tull. they got many qualities, but they're not anyone's real definition of struggling even probably at Hard Rock, to be honest with you, but what's your thoughts on the album though, Mike, And Justice for All?
When I first got it, I listened to it a lot and I didn't pick up on the fact that Jason was mixed down in the final product. I don't know why I didn't, but I wasn't really paying attention to that. I just was fired up that Metallica had a new album out and it had a bunch of bangers on it.
Okay. So what did you think when you listened back to it recently? Has your thought changed on it?
Knowing the background on it, I'm like, it doesn't, it kind of bothers me now.
Right.
That I don't know what Jason was sounding like while he was playing these songs,
Yeah.
Other than the live stuff from that era.
Mm-hmm. I don't rate this album as highly as a lot of others. I personally feel that it's a so-so album with one absolute stone cold classic on there. I find that a lot of the songs, it starts a trend for the albums getting longer, which will continue to this day.
Yeah, definitely. There's not one song that's under 5 minutes long on this album.
Yeah. So all the other albums were around about 50 minutes. This goes to an hour and 5 minutes.
And it's obvious that it's the CD era where they're.
Yes, indeed, and it only gets worse. We get the following album is 1 hour and 2, but then we got 1 hour and 18, 1 hour and 16, 1 hour and 15, 1 hour and 14, 1 hour and a half, and then 1 hour and 17. So,
dial it back a little bit, fellas.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they do. We'll get to that. We'll get to that when we might. But I think. I mean, the track that I love, and I'm sure is everyone's favourite track from this album, I don't know what you think, Mike, but for me, one, One, because it was the introduction to the band for me musically, but I think also it just stands up as it's kind of like a thrash metal Stairway to Heaven to me, you know.
It's got a great story behind it, and it, you know, it's the one that blasted them into the stratosphere.
Yes.
Funny story about that song, just recently, my younger child and I were going out to a concert in Syracuse, and she had her earbuds in. I was listening to the Metallica audiobook that you recommended to me.
Okay, yeah.
In the car, my kid's next to me in the passenger seat. I could hear Metallica's guitars coming out of her earbuds, and I'm like, "Yes, I did it." And she was listening to one. I'm like, "All right."
Parenting win for you there, Mike. Excellent. Well, let's take a listen to that now, and then we can talk a bit more about it. Such a good one, Mike, isn't it? Such a classic.
Yeah, this is you can tell that James is really developing his singing style at this point.
The growl, yeah.
Yes, I was just going to say the growl that
that's really coming through now. Yeah, he's becoming the James Hetfield that we all know and love as a vocalist. Yeah. So I think, you know, as you said, Mike, this was the album that sort of pushed them into the big leagues. And particularly that song and its an accompanying video, of course, which I think probably was a big factor in that
Absolutely. It was. I remember when they world premiered that video on MTV, and after they world premiered it, I mean, it's a 7.5 minute long song, and they play the whole song in this video, and MTV was playing a 7.5 minute long video every couple hours, and you couldn't escape it at that point. And That definitely launched them for sure, even though they were reticent about making a video in the first place.
Yes, but of course, being Metallica, they did it their own way. And you, again, girls, 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 this is not.
No, a little bit somber.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the video is and the song is based around a short film called Johnny Got His Gun about a First World War veteran who's basically, you know, lost all his limbs, his sight, you know, and he's basically pleading to be put out of his misery. And you know, everything's kind of, that's why the video and the song work so well together, because they cut footage of the film into the video, didn't they? And it's powerful stuff, you know. And I say it just really starkly drew a contrast between the sort of metal that Metallica represented and the sort of stuff that, like say, the LA hair bands were putting out, you know.
They were definitely starting to become a serious songwriting band. I mean, they were in the first place, but this is not Party Time Metallica like on Kill 'Em All, or we're serious. This is our direction. We're going this way. We're going to give you some maybe disturbing stuff that may make you a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it's marked them out as a little bit different, and as we'll get to tomorrow, is one of the things that I think helped them sustain their longevity and popularity through the ups and downs that were coming in the 90s. But as you mentioned, Mike, that, you know, there is no bass guitar basically on this whole album, which again, for part of the reason I don't like listening to it as much, because it's just not as nice to listen to. Mm-hmm. We'll come to that again later in the week as well, with another album in particular, for different reasons. But yes, as part of their sort of hazing of Jason, the new guy, the bass is basically non-existent in the mix, and it's all you hear is the guitars and drums and vocals. Now, I believe out there on the interwebs, Mike, there is something called And Justice for Jason, where a fan took it upon himself to basically put together a bass added mix or version. So, but it's not officially available anywhere, but if you're that keen, it's out there somewhere.
I will have to listen.
It's called And Justice for Jason. So any other tracks you want to have a listen to from And Justice for All before we wrap up today, Mike?
I really dig Dyer's Eve. It's a great way to close the album. Okay. And yep. A good way to close this right, episode.
Well, what we'll do is we'll play out with some Dyer's Eve, and we will be back tomorrow to talk about the next stage in Metallic's career, and one that would change not only their careers but pretty much a lot of things for a lot of bands. But thanks for sticking with us today. I hope you've enjoyed what we've been talking about. If you've got any comments you'd like to share with us, you can contact the show. It's at Suburbs Pod on all the socials. I'm at Stephen Routledge on Facebook. Mike, you are?
At Mike Coley on Twitter and Mike Coley on Facebook as well. I also do a radio show on Rockin' Suburbs Radio.
Of course, yes.
Two of them. I have one on Saturday from 11 to 1 Eastern Time, called Walking at a Suburban Pace, and that's just basically a freeform type thing where whatever I feel like that week, that's what I'm playing. And I have another show. It's a 1 hour long ska show, nothing but ska and ska related things, on Tuesday nights from 7 to 8, suburbsradio.com.
And that has a puntastic name as well.
Mardi Ska, because it's on Tuesday nights, and Mardi is French for Tuesday.
So listen to Mike on Suburbs Radio, and if you want to call in and leave a comment, you can phone the Suburban Party line, which is 612-440-1984. With that, we will hit a bit of Dyer's Eve and speak to you tomorrow.
Listen to that album now.
It's much like St. Anger. It's like, if you want to listen to any of those songs from it, just listen to the live versions, because they're better. They sound better. They just sound better. In fact, I'm sure it's probably possible to put together a And Justice for All live playlist of all of them, just live versions, you know,